By the way, with very little fanfare, of course, because it wasn't a television broadcast, the Golden Globe winners were announced, and the best TV series drama was Succession. It beat out Squid Game, you know, the planet's favorite show. And The Morning Show on Apple TV Plus, which some of you just love, 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 among others. The best TV series, musical or comedy, went to Hacks, beating out Ted Lasso, which everybody love, love, loves. And Reservation Dogs, and Only Murders in the Building, and The Great, also on Hulu. One, two, three of those on Hulu. One on Apple Plus, and one on HBO Max, Hacks the winner. It's 12:11 on WGN. Lise Glink, do you watch any of those shows? Are any of those your favorites?
I've watched a number of them. I thought Hacks was terrific.
Which one is Hacks now? Refresh my memory.
Hacks is the one where she goes to work for the as a comedic writer, I think.
Right? Yes.
And I thought that was just really clever and interesting. I love The Morning Show. And, of course, Succession is, boy, those characters just make me not want to be a billionaire, at least not this week.
Not want to work for Rupert Murdoch. well, in Hacks, we watched that series, and I thought it was pretty good. The one problem I had with it is this young woman who's an up-and-coming comedian gets to work for this famous comedian. But the famous comedian is not that funny in person or on stage. The show was never funny. You know what I mean?
Right. It's certainly not my brand of humor anyway. But, you know, it's not a little bit of make-believe.
It's not the marvelous Mrs. Maisel, which I thought did both. It showed how funny they could be on stage and not off stage. Actually, Mrs. Maisel was funny in both, but you know, you thought you had a better sense of the real life of this comedian. You did in Hacks, but there was very little comedic relief. Do I remember that correctly?
I think so. I think she's not funny at all, and then the comedy writer helps her become a little bit more funny, but I'm waiting to see what the next season is going to look like. I'm hoping that dynamic flips a little bit and the whole thing has a few more laughs to it.
Market's off today. What's going on?
Yeah, there's no laughing about what's going on Wall Street. So after a year of literally record-breaking highs, I think the Dow reached 70 new highs last year. Boy, this first 10 days has been kind of tough. And so the markets are down quite a bit today. NASDAQ was down, I think, almost 2% or a little over 2%. It's now about, I don't know, 1.75% down. On a percentage basis, the Dow is down almost 400 points. It was down well over 400. Everybody's getting a little bit nervous, right? We've got earnings season starting. Tech earnings should be strong. Tesla just got a big buy rating, I think, from Goldman Sachs. But, you know, we're going to start seeing interest rates go up. They've already jumped up about a quarter of a percentage point. They're supposed to go up officially 3, maybe 4, Goldman says, 4 times this year. Bitcoin is down. So everybody's a little bit shaken up, I think, by Omicron, by what's going to happen with tech earnings, and I think just the malaise of this pandemic overall.
You mentioned Tesla, and you said they did well. There was a story in the Times over the weekend, and they said that Tesla didn't sell anywhere near as many cars as General Motors did. But Tesla sold about 800,000 units last year, and General Motors sold about 2 million. To me, that's almost half. And Tesla was more profitable than General Motors was. And I didn't realize Tesla was catching up that fast. To me, 800,000 to 2 million is getting there, you know?
Oh, I think they're going to be very, very close to them this year. And I think that's the real concern is that, you know, Tesla has caught up quite quickly. They are more profitable. They're building factories around the world. And it's the rate of growth that has driven that stock to just incredible highs. Now, General Motors, I think, announced also, maybe it was last week, that they are starting and moving very quickly into their electric vehicle program. And I think what's interesting about that, and sort of the big takeaway, John, is that I don't know about you, but I'm starting to see charging stations, electric charging stations, pop up everywhere. In our downtown of, you know, the local town I live in, Glencoe, downtown Chicago, we're seeing it all over the place. And Tesla is really responsible for driving a lot of that growth. But we're seeing all of the car companies make those moves. And, it, you know, at first I was like, hey, you're taking up 2 new parking spaces when parking's at such a, you know, premium in my town. And yet the reality is we want to get there. We want everybody to be encouraged to go out and do what they can for you know, climate change, and electric vehicles is a big part of that. And Europe is a lot further along than the U.S. And so I expect to see much more growth, much more quickly, pushed by Tesla.
One of the reasons in that story they said Tesla was so competitive is that they better anticipated the supply chain issues. The big three or four or whatever it is now said that they didn't expect buyers to be as aggressive or as wanting as they were, and they just did not manage. And it's probably harder to manage a General Motors than it is the supply side of a Tesla, but that was part of the issue. Talk to me about interest rates. What's the Federal Reserve thinking now?
Well, they're looking, they've announced three official rates for this year, 2022, and into 2023. But Goldman Sachs said they think there's actually going to be four. And this week we hear about where inflation is going. And there's some real concern out there that inflation is going up even more than it was going up at the end of last year. And I think that nervousness around the inflation data that's coming out, Jerome Powell's about to go through confirmation hearing, all of it is, you know, the Fed announced it's going to reduce its balance sheet. There's so much nervousness about all of these key financial supports that have been propping up this crazy stock market we've seen.
So if they keep raising interest rates, they might be able to tamp down inflation. And so you kind of pick your poison there, I guess. It's 1217 on WGN. Let's pause here. I want to talk to you about the housing market. Amy Kite was on with us a little bit ago. She said it's still a very good time if you are a seller. And climate change and what it's costing us. Elise Glink's on the line. Let's talk a little bit about the housing market. What's your word of wisdom on this? Oh, wait, before you answer that, Elise.
Okay.
I have to tell them about Executive Green Carpet Cleaning.
Oh, go ahead.
Over 30 years ago, a young Dave Rampitt started Executive Green Carpet Cleaning, putting quality and customer experience above everything else. Today, Dave's daughter, Kelly, who I spoke to over the weekend, and his son, Scott, uphold those same values. I was kind of teasing her. I said, wow, this is just like the commercial on the radio because we have a rug in our house. And I was thinking, oh, I think we should get it cleaned. So I called Executive Green Carpet Cleaning and Kelly answered the phone just the way we said on the radio. Actually, she must have been busy when I called because they would call you back. I might have even called on a weekend. Anyway, I get the call back from her. She was positively delightful. She asked me, what's the size? What's the composition? What's the issue? Where do you live? How can we schedule it? Just really friendly, positive, sincere people. So I'll vouch for how delightful Kelly is. And my family will tell you, having used Executive Green Carpet Cleaning in several of our homes several times, that they really do a great job. They use the most powerful carpet cleaning machines in the world. They thoroughly scrub the carpet. It's a step that steam carpet cleaning companies ignore. They use ultra-purified water. They don't apply harsh chemicals. And it's dry to the finish in a couple of hours. They're only charging you $156 for three rooms to sparkle. Call 630-990-8600. $156 is all. 630-990-8600. Click on WGNClean.com. Okay, so let's pick it up there. Let's talk a little bit about the real estate market. What's your wisdom about that, Elise?
Well, the wisdom is that the housing market here and everywhere else seems extremely strong. And in December, it was literally on fire. Also, through all of 2021, Redfin had new numbers out about the end of the year and where we're starting. And just to run through those, John, I mean, they're kind of mind-numbing, but the median home sale price increased 14% year over year to $358,000. It's just shy of an all-time high.
That's Chicago.
It's nationally. Chicago is not far behind that. Pending sales were up 3.5% year over year. The number of homes for sale is down again 10% from a year earlier. The number of active listings, that's the number of homes listed for sale at any point in time, fell 27%. And yet the number of homes being sold rose. And so what you're seeing is just a huge number of homes that are selling in days, not weeks or months. They're going under contract for more than the list price. In fact, I just heard about another sale in Atlanta that went for $150,000 over asking price. High-end home. These are not, you know, low-end homes. High-end homes went under contract in less than a day. at $150,000 over list price. So we're seeing that here in Chicago as well, not quite as much. 41% of all homes sold above list price last year. That's up from 33% of all homes the year before.
41% of homes sold above list.
Yep.
You know, we tend to cheer news like this, but if you're a buyer, this is pretty glum.
Well,
I'm not sure if glum's a word, but I mean, you know, the inventory's low, interest rates are going up, and you may have to pay more than they even are asking.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people have turned to renting simply because they can't afford to buy. And the number of new homes being built, John, the new homes are all at the sort of upper mid to upper level. There are almost no homes being built for first-time home buyers. And by that, I mean at a price point that somebody earning, say, $60,000, $70,000 a year could afford.
Yeah, Brenda and I were talking about that the other day because she was actually in a neighborhood or saw one where it was reasonably priced, you know, nice newer homes. And she said, that's the neighborhood you're always talking about, John, one of these. We need more of these kinds of homes because what you end up doing then is finding a house that you can afford that needs work, which maybe you can't afford.
No, and there are fewer and fewer of those because a lot of people have become professionalized flippers, where they're buying these houses and then they turn around and they fix them up and they sell them. Sometimes they do a great job, sometimes not so great, but they look good in the pictures, and that seems to be what's getting these homes sold. And there's so little inventory and so little to compare it to that people are still buying homes sight unseen over the internet without having a professional home inspector take a look at them, without a mortgage contingency. So they're basically saying, yes, I'll take any home as fast as they can get their hands on it, which is not good for the long-term health of the market, I have to say.
I wonder if people have trouble getting the loan on the homes that appraise out in value.
It's not going. That's not happening as much as you would imagine, simply because all of these boats are rising in the water, flood water. So when the appraiser goes out and they're comparing the property to other properties that are sold, there are plenty of them.
Oh, lo and behold, now it is worth that. Climate change costs us financially, you told Pete. What's up here?
Yeah, so Statista analyzed Aon's data for 2021, and it turns out that natural disasters last year caused economic losses of $283 billion, which is, I think, the seventh time in maybe a decade that we're over $100 billion, which is a really, really big number. And the sixth year of 10. And all of these are natural, right? It's Hurricane Ida cost $65 billion, 95 people died. European floods, remember seeing those pictures?
Oh, yeah.
$43 billion in damage, 240 people died. And then we had the Texas winter storm about a year ago where they lost power and everybody was freezing. $23 billion in costs, 210 people died from that. And it's amazing, but the wildfires don't even rank. The ones that we got at the end of 2021 up in the Northwest, that's not even in the top three of the most costly disasters. And so these natural disasters just continue to go up and up. And generally, you know, people think they've got insurance, but insurance only covered about 38% of the cost of these, and everybody else just picks it up. And so if it happens to you and you're not fully insured, it could literally wipe you out.
I don't offer this as cautionary because I don't think it stands much of a chance of repeating in any fashion around here. But do you remember in the Texas winter storm, some of the people had bought energy at a lower price? But because of what happened, some people were getting $1,000 electric bills.
Yes.
And a lot of us are now switching to or contemplating alternative payment plans, level price paying, or seeking out other energy sources. And the people that did that thought they were smart in Texas until everything quit. I don't know if you remember that, but I do seem to remember that was a big part of the story.
Absolutely it was. You know, these companies come in and they offer, you know, what looks like, you know, dirt cheap pricing. But when something goes wrong, it's really flexible. It works the way that Uber and Lyft do with surge pricing. So, you know, and we experienced that trying to get home from the airport, or actually I should say we were in New Orleans going to the airport on January 1st at 3 o'clock in the morning. And guess what everybody else was doing at 3 o'clock in the morning on January 1st? Going home from the downtown and trying to get a cab was going to cost us $150 for a 15-minute ride. And that's surge pricing, and that's what happened down in Texas.
That was a cab or that was a rideshare?
Sorry, an Uber, a rideshare.
Yeah.
We ended up taking a cab, and it cost us, I think, a very reasonable $60 instead.
Fortunately, you were able to find one.
Yes,
but that was at the airport. Other part. But I mean, if you try and find a cab downtown, it was a little better this summer, but it still wasn't great.
Got to use the Curb app on that.
Yeah, you know what?
Yes, thank
you,
Don.
Really, that's CURB, right? Curb.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yep, you got it.
And that's rideshare for taxi cabs, correct?
Exactly. You can just see the rate ahead of time. It's beautiful.
Yeah, I'm glad you jumped in there on that. And Elise, it's good to talk to you today, too.
And you as well, John.
That's Elise Glink, the real estate and financial wellness expert and the owner of Think Glink Media. Visit thinkglink.com. We're joined by Jim Dahlke, the senior editor at chicagoinno.com. Hey, Jim, happy new week to you. How are you?
Hey, John, good. Thanks for having me.
Let's talk a little bit about this Cameo competitor in Chicago. First, tell us about who they are. They went on Shark Tank the other day, and then tell us what happened.
Yeah, so Candy is the startup here that's a bit of a Cameo competitor, like you mentioned. And their whole deal is they offer live video chats with celebrities. So their famous folks on their platform include Tori Spelling, Saturday Night Live vet Chris Kattan, and musicians like Maya and Cisco. They've grown to about 350 celebrities on their platform over the last year or so, where they allow for one-on-one video chats. So think just like the Zoom calls you're doing at work, but with famous celebrities. So they charge anywhere from $5 for a 5-minute session, all the way up to $400 with folks like Chaka Khan. They've had a nice little growth, but certainly kind of competing with Cameo. Cameo, of course, a Chicago company that offers pre-recorded video messages from celebrities, but they've got one-on-one video chats as a new product feature as well. So Candy kind of operating a little bit differently, but also a direct competitor with Cameo as well.
I was surprised they were able to get away with it. It sounded so similar to Cameo's model, and the names are even similar. And I thought, I heard them with Lisa Dent and Steve Bertrand the other day on our radio station, this husband and wife team, right? And I thought, oh, that's a good idea, but I think you're going to, I don't think you can do that. Evidently, they can, huh?
Yeah, and they kind of ran into that a little bit during their Shark Tank appearance. So as you alluded to, they appeared on the Shark Tank stage on Friday night. They went into the tank asking for $500,000 for 15% equity in their business. They pitched the sharks you're familiar with, but included Kevin Hart, the celebrity shark on the program. And the sharks did not bite. They were saying that the company was a little too new, the competition was a little too fierce, a la Cameo, and was asking for honestly a little bit too much money. They thought $500,000 was a little bit too rich of an ask, the sharks said. So unfortunately for Candy, they left the tank without a deal.
Of course, they can find a traditional financing or a traditional financing other ways. So, the one thing that is interesting, too, who did well on Cameo is Rod Blagojevich. Much of Rod Blagojevich's income is now based on Cameo videos that he makes. If he did a Candy video, instead of you spoofing a friend with a Blagojevich video, you could set a friend up with a chance to talk live via video to Rod Blagojevich, in which case you could scream at him and yell at him, call him all sorts of bad names and tell him how you feel about him. And then I wonder, Blagojevich maybe hangs up, but then maybe then you don't have to pay. I mean, it just seems to me like in this day and age, I wonder how willing celebrities are to put themselves in verbal harm's way, right?
That's right. And, what the founders told me was that, they're seeing users use these live video chats for lots of different things. So one, it could be just like, hey, I want to meet my, a celebrity that I'm really into and I really like. But people are also doing it for, business opportunities, right? If you want to pitch a celebrity to endorse your business or talk to them about a business opportunity. So, there's a lot of different use cases that you can get with a one-on-one video with a celebrity where you can sort of break through the noise in a way that, a cold email it doesn't really land, right? So people are doing it in a lot of different ways, and they're finding a lot of different use cases for Candy.
Candi. This is a fascinating story that you wrote about this quantum startup company, EEROQ. Is that EROQ?
Yeah, that's right, EROQ. This is a Michigan business. They're developing a quantum computing chip, and they announced last week that they are moving their headquarters to Chicago. So they are going to be located at the Terminal, which is a new innovation workspace in Humboldt Park, leasing about 10,000 square feet. They're going to be the first tenant there in the Terminal. And, you know, their HQ relocation really comes to Chicago as sort of continuing to position itself as this hub for quantum computing talent. Last year, the city became home to the first accelerator program in the country that's dedicated to startups focused solely on quantum science and technology. And, you know, that announcement came on the heels of a 2020 plan from the U.S. Department of Energy to launch five new quantum research centers across the U.S. And two of those five are actually in the Chicago area at Argonne and Fermilab. And those facilities are getting $115 million in funding over the next 5 years. So there's quite a bit of activity actually happening in this deep tech quantum computing stuff. And, you know, and yet another company relocating here to Chicago really to tap into the city's talent.
Will they make a product? Are they going to make chips?
Yeah, so they're making chips for quantum computers, and they say their ultimate goal is to build a large-scale quantum computer based on its chip technology.
One more company to talk about today, HIGI. How do you pronounce that?
Yeah, that's Higi. Higi is a health kiosk company. Been around for a while now, launched in 2012, and you know, you may have run into Higi at a pharmacy or a retail shop. They have their health kiosks where folks can go and get a bunch of different health measures, like their blood pressure and their pulse, their weight, their BMI, a bunch of different health metrics. They have about 10,000 stations across the country, used by more than 61 million people to date. They were just acquired. So last week they were bought by a British health tech firm called Babylon. Deal was undisclosed, but Babylon led Higi's Series B round of funding. It's $30 million back in 2020. So Babylon you know, felt the need to sort of continue to invest in the business so much to acquire it. So Higi, really one of the most well-known kind of consumer health tech businesses in Chicago, and just got acquired last week.
It's a kiosk, in other words, huh?
Essentially, yeah. So their kiosks are all over the place, all over the country. You probably run into it without even knowing it. You know, drop your arm in there and get your blood pressure checked.
Right. Okay, I have seen those. Yeah, interesting. Jim Dahlke from Chicago Inno. Nice to talk to you as always, Jim. Thanks for your help today.
Thanks, Sean.
We've got more business news on the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Public relations giant Edelman says it's going to part ways with clients that don't adhere to the company's new guidelines covering environmental and social standards. The decision follows a review of clients that was done in response to pressure from climate activists. AdAge reports the review focused on clients from emission-intensive sectors, including travel, agriculture, and automotive. The group Clean Creatives petitioned Edelman to drop its oil and gas clients, including ExxonMobil and Shell. Edelman, based here in Chicago, will also focus on bringing down its own carbon footprint. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
And the business of food with Steve Alexander.
You may remember, John, last week I did a story about airlines beginning to use sustainable jet fuel made with soybeans. And you assigned me the task of finding out all of the uses of soybeans, I found somebody else to do it for me. This expert agreed to do my homework for me.
Yeah. Hello, I'm April Hemmes, a farmer from North Central Iowa.
How many acres do you farm, April?
Around 1,000, and it's been in the family 120 years. And what makes me different is I'm the farmer. My husband has a real job in town.
Okay, so let's go through the list of things we use that are made from soy, and we can leave out a couple of the obvious ones like tofu and the soy milk that we put in our lattes and whatnot.
Yeah, well, I always like to think of soybeans as the unicorn of all commodities. You know, it's that elusive thing everybody wants, but it's kind of more like a chameleon. If you want it, we can do it almost. I mean, obviously the big thing is animal feed. The soybean meal goes, almost all of it goes to feed animals. If you like your bacon, you can thank soybean farmers. So it goes into chicken feed, hog feed, turkey feed. And then the oil goes way over half, goes into human use. But also we're finding a lot more uses for the oil. Of course, biofuels, renewable diesel is coming on strong. The brand new things, and it was developed here at Iowa State University, is an additive for asphalt, and they mix it in and it replaces the petroleum chemicals. I just got a pair of Skechers, and the soybean oil is in the sole of the Skechers, and that same stuff is used for tires. Truthfully, the list goes on and on. It goes into artificial turf, if you're watching.
Unfortunately, we don't have time for April Hemis to give us the rest of the list. Just know that soybeans are kind of a miracle that come out of the ground. From the farm to your belly, today's National Bittersweet Chocolate Day. And it's National Oysters Rockefeller Day. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
It's amazing, and there's over 1,000 soy-based products, but those are some of the highlights.
I was at the drugstore over the weekend and saw that they had a lot more of the COVID test kits, so I bought a couple more. I'm used to buying these now when I can find them. I got two more at $25 each. So that's $50 that I would not have otherwise spent. And I know that there's a lot of startup costs. But Amy Guth joins us now on the Wintrust Business Lunch. I was thinking, Amy, I spent $50 on the materials in that thing. Could not have cost them $3. A tiny little vial, a tiny little amount of liquid, a tiny little strip, some plastic packaging. And that was it. And I gave them $50 for that stuff. And I just thought, I'll bet whoever these companies are that are making these things are making a fortune right now. Don't you think?
Well, you know, Bloomberg had some really interesting reporting out earlier that I thought was really fascinating, kind of taking a look at that very thing, really, but mostly focusing on the pipeline issues that are hitting a lot of test companies right now. So if people are noticing a little bit of a delay, if you have to send your results in for a PCR, or if you're going to get a test somewhere and you're feeling like, hey, they said 24 or 48 hours and it's been a few more days, what's going on? Part of that is this logjam. Some companies are experiencing situations where lab workers are calling out sick because they have COVID. There was one lab in New Jersey that Bloomberg talked to. The CEO said more than 40% of its workforce was out with COVID recently. So we're seeing that. We're seeing supply chain issues of people being able to get the components of the test. But also Abbott Labs was in this reporting from Bloomberg here, right here locally in North Chicago. And they had, along with some others, kind of started to scale down production of tests and at the time where we thought Delta was kind of going, kind of starting to level off. And when people earlier, when we thought that if you were vaccinated, that meant you don't need to test anymore. So they and some other companies started to kind of level off. Some even, Abbott, for example, destroyed some test card components that the company thought would probably expire before they were ever needed. And then suddenly Omicron comes in and it's causing like kind of a bit of whiplash for these companies that suddenly thought, oh no, now we need to ramp back up in a very, very big way to meet demand. One company called, it's the OnGo home rapid test. That's made by Intrivio. The CEO said, he said something kind of funny to Bloomberg. He said they've been using private jets that they chartered to get tests to labs at other parts of the country because they don't have the capacity. And he said, I don't fly private, but my tests do. I thought kind of a funny thing that to say there, but it's really interesting to see how companies are trying to kind of make it work and scramble to meet testing demand.
There's a ground beef recall out right now.
Well, there is, and for now, it's based out of Oregon, so it is impacting those states, but it's ground beef that was distributed to Targets and Walmarts and a lot of big box stores. So for now, we're not in the Midwest. Some earlier reporting kind of indicated that it perhaps would extend to the Midwest, but for now, it is being contained to just kind of Western states, but that's something I'm definitely going to be keeping an eye on. It's 28,000 pounds of ground beef, so it's really quite a bit. The way the ground beef is manufactured and commercial plants, it's often hard to contain a full, contain to an area because often that's not just one cow, that's probably several cows. So I'll be keeping an eye on that to make sure it doesn't hit the Midwest.
Yeah, I'm just looking at that now. And a lot of these states that are subject to the recall are states where we get jokes from. Arizona, California, Nevada, Utah, Washington, Oregon, Wyoming. And I guess the thing to look for on the packaging is the establishment number 965, if you see that out there. Talk to me about the strange things that happened at the CES show 2022.
Oh my gosh. Well, I was keeping an eye on it because a lot of companies were kind of backing out of it due to COVID concerns. But it went ahead as planned and some really interesting stuff came out of it. Here's some highlights. There's a product called Ghost Pacer, and it's essentially a pair of sunglasses that looks kind of like Oakley sunglasses that you'd wear for sports and things like that, that will, through when you're wearing the glasses, you will see another runner. It's essentially your avatar is your coach and they will help pace you. So if you say, I want to run that 12-minute mile, this avatar that you will appear to be kind of chasing off to the side will be running along with you to pace you to make sure you're not going too slow or too fast.
I love this idea. I love this. I'm serious.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting. Yeah. Part of me said I might get competitive and try, like, I'm going to catch that avatar. But, like, I know it's there to pace me. I think that's a really interesting idea.
But if I understand correctly, say you want to run a 6-minute mile and you're at 6:15, now the avatar would appear further ahead and you would need to catch up with it, right?
Yep, but it'll always stay a little bit ahead of you because it's there just to pace you. It's the idea of like a pacing, the people that are carrying the signs in marathons, it's that same idea.
Yeah.
But it's this kind of robot-looking creature. It looks really interesting. If you go to the website, ghostpacer.com, they kind of show a demo of it, and it's pretty fascinating looking, but the glasses just look like a regular pair of sports kind of sunglasses. There was a lot of around wearables at CES that I thought was interesting. So there's a company, a Spanish company called OWO. They make clothing for gaming and the metaverse. So essentially, if you are in a video game and you jump off a hill, that would kind of simulate that feeling. If you're playing a boxing game and you get punched, the shirt would help you feel that. So if you're flying or falling, it's all called haptic feedback, which I think is just kind of an interesting idea. They claim they even have something not quite as painful, but something that would, if you were in a video game and got stabbed, it would even kind of press on you to show that. It, pretty interesting idea. I think we've seen something like that with some roller coaster rides. You know, the seat will shake if you're going over certain terrain.
Right.
But this would be a shirt that has all these sensors on it. Also, fitness trackers for our pets. And when that seems kind of excessive, but what they're talking about really is monitoring their habits and their blood pressure and their heart rate, things like that, to help them have a healthier life and stay with you a little bit longer. And then speaking of Abbott here in North Chicago, they unveiled a wearable. The CEO and chairman, he gave a keynote address at CES. And this wearable, you know, biofeedback device, he said that it was created out of their diabetes management system that they kind of pioneered in 2014. And it's a wearable that you stick onto and it will monitor your glucose and your ketones and you know, just it's ideally to help people, consumers, manage their own weight, give yourself athletic feedback, things like that, so you can really kind of get your diet very dialed in. And he was describing in his keynote, so that you can understand what your body needs and when it needs it, which is kind of a really interesting idea too.
I don't know that I want that. My folks had blood pressure gauge they had out the other day. I thought, I ought to take my blood pressure. I thought, I don't want to take my blood pressure right now. So I didn't. But
yeah.
Now that sounds like that's where the world is going. Really interesting stuff from the Consumer Electronics Show. Okay, nice to talk
Definitely.
To you. Thank you, Amy.